Hey, sports fans, it's world champion Andy Gepper, Mike North. Punch this number in your phone right now. If you're driving, pull over. 1-800-808-3419. 1-800-808-3419 for a free pick and info for the premier handicapping site in the country, Vegas Scores and Odds.com. It's the only site you'll ever need with expert handicappers like John Anthony, Denny Macklin, Tony Sacco, Ray Monahan, yours truly, and many more. Check out the homepage of Vegas Scores and Odds.com for a tote board with your buddy. Follow Vegas Scores and Odds on Twitter and dial up 1-800-808-3419. It's 1-800-808-3419, 1-800-808-3419, or go to VegasScoresandOdds.com.
The following program is suitable for all ages.
The phone. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffon, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass. And get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. And play it right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffon 55. The John Buffon Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffon 55, a fast-paced approach to Chicago Bears football analysis. I am your host, John Buffon, and I'm coming to you live Tuesday night, October 22nd, over our Mixlr.com channel. Every week, we take a deep dive into the Chicago Bears' upcoming opponent, and here to help us this week with the LA Chargers is John Kegley, co-host of the Locked On Chargers podcast. John's going to join us in just a little bit, but first, I want to welcome my producer and moderator, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, after three quarters Sunday, I tweeted out that it was incredible that only three quarters had gone by because it felt like the Saints had been in victory formation for 2 hours. This latest loss felt like a slow execution. I felt like I was watching the final scene of Braveheart. The game was over and the crowds were yelling for mercy. I don't care how close the final score turned out to be. I was disgusted. How are you feeling about the Bears?
I don't, listening to that opening from your Uncle Doug, I feel like that could have described that Bears team that we saw on Sunday. Would you agree?
Oh my God. If he were alive doing the show right now, it would have been can't miss radio. I miss him all the time, but I miss him on days like that because that would have been absolute fire.
And that game was just horrible. I feel like, I know there's been much worse times to be a Bears fan as we've seen in recent years, but you can't help but feel incredibly just crushed given the expectations for the season. I mean, the talent on this team, particularly on defense, I mean, it just feels like it's being wasted. Sitting through that entire game, I felt like I was willingly subjecting myself to torture. And I stuck it out through the end. But, oh my God, that was horrible.
That's the thing. I mean, it hurts more because the expectations are higher. I mean, whenever you're not expecting anything, it's just, oh, well, okay, yeah, they suck. But whenever you're expecting the team to play well and they don't, that's what stings the most.
Absolutely. And John, I'm already looking forward to your Buffon boost at the end because whoever's getting it, they really need it.
I would say so.
So, John, before we bring in John, our guest from the Chargers, I want to let our listeners know how our show works. So we begin and end the show with five questions that you have 55 seconds to respond to. That's John's way of dedicating Buffon 55 to Doug Buffon, his uncle who played 15 seasons for the Chicago Bears and wore number 55. So, John, let's get the first five in the books, and then we'll bring in our guest.
Let's go.
So, John, when you inventory what went wrong with the Bears on Sunday, the list is very long. Is there one thing that disappointed you more than anything else? And I realize that 55 seconds is not nearly enough, but them's the rules. Let's go.
Well, last week I said I was really excited for this game because I thought it was going to be the measuring stick for where the rest of the season was going. We'd see what changes were made and how the Bears were going to adjust. And that's what we got? 2 weeks to look worse? 2 weeks of self-scouting for that performance? 2 weeks of prep to run the ball seven times? 2 weeks of prep to have less than 100 yards of offense at halftime? 2 weeks of prep for your starting quarterback to look gun-shy as soon as the ball was snapped? To miss open receivers? To look completely lost? If that's what we're getting in for the rest of the season, then buckle up, because we're heading into a wood chipper, guys. That was pathetic. I wanted to turn the game off in the third quarter. Like I said, it felt like the game was over 2 hours before the final whistle. The Bears couldn't run. They couldn't pass. They couldn't do anything on the offensive side of the ball. And the problem is, this was supposed to be the revamped product. This was after assessing the team during a bye week. This was the new and improved game plan. They stunk.
You look at the team last year, and it's just shocking that there could be such a significant drop-off. You know, and the frustrating thing is that it's not just one thing. There are so many things that went wrong, offense and even defensively. I mean, because we can't let them off the hook. I know, even though they were out there an excruciating amount of time because of the offense, but I mean, just there's plenty of blame to pass around. This does not feel like we're watching the 2019 Bears. It feels like we're watching the 2014 Bears.
It's so bad to see a roster that was basically intact from last year with a few guys not there. But to see it just being night and day is just so frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. So one of the hot topics at Bears Barroom and really throughout the media and the entire football world right now is the question of who owns the biggest responsibility for the failing offense. Is it Matt Nagy or Mitch Trubisky? What's your take? 55 seconds.
I don't want to get it twisted here. Neither are doing well. Play calling, preparation, adjustments, all of that falls on the head coach. I mean, why are they only able to run the ball in 2 yards in a clip? And why are they only doing it seven times in a game? Why does it look like the quarterback has no clue what he's doing at points? So, some of that obviously can get put on the head coach's shoulders. But geez, oh man, the quarterback's not doing his coaches any favor either. Mitch looked terrible. Don't come at me with his stats, because most of them came in garbage time in the last 5 minutes after they recovered an onside kick. He was missing guys that were open, and even the flight on some of his throws looked like a wounded duck. Carson Wentz would have had a field day with some of those. The one overthrow to Anthony Miller is now being narrated as Miller ran the wrong way or the wrong route. Okay, that happens. Sometimes throws look off the mark. And we've seen Miller freelance a little bit at times. But at some point, the quarterback has to recognize that not everything is going to be perfectly in its place at all times. Eventually, you have to make something happen that isn't scripted. And what I'm seeing is a guy that honestly looked like the moment, the pressure, and the job is too much for him.
And I mean, it's really hard to just, you know, delve out blame, because I feel like obviously both deserve equal amounts of blame. It's just incredibly frustrating. But like you said, Trubisky, this is his third season, and he goes out there looking like he doesn't belong out there. And this is supposed to be that growth and that development, and we're not seeing it. And I know that Matt Nagy is not doing him any favors with that play calling, but, I mean, Mitch, if you're the guy, then you got to show us that you're the guy, and I don't think he's the guy.
You don't get drafted number two just to, you know, fade away in the middle of the game.
Absolutely, and sticking on the topic of Mitch Trubisky, one of the things that I've noticed is that some of his most ardent supporters are starting to express doubts about whether that he's really the long-term answer here at quarterback. You know, where are you on at whether Mitch is likely to be the franchise quarterback Ryan Pace thought he picked in the 2017 draft? Clock starts ticking when you start talking.
Look, you can go back on this show or social media or anything. I've always tried to be cautiously optimistic about Mitch Trubisky. I like that he was there as the rookie because he represented hope when Mike Glennon was bursting into flames. I like that he was there last year because it appeared that he was a young quarterback going through some growing pains, but showed promise in a new offense. And what have I said from the beginning of this season? Now is the time we can hold him to a higher standard. This is the year you can be critical if it's not clicking. And guess what? It ain't clicking at all. I know the Bears aren't setting him up in a great situation. I know he isn't getting much blocking help. I know the run game sucks, or they're not even trying to run the ball. But, you know, it's okay to say the quarterback isn't playing well. It's okay to believe your eyes sometimes. And you know what my eyes are telling me? This ain't the guy. The tools are there. Yeah, there are some flashes. But eventually, a franchise quarterback, and I use that term in the sense that it's a guy that you can rely on to win you ball games. Eventually, the franchise quarterback needs to bail out a team, overcome a bad line, a bad run attack, a bad defense. It looks like they're going to have to start winning in spite of him, and that's not a long-term plan.
I've been someone that's been willing to give Trubisky the benefit of the doubt, and obviously this year was huge. I mean, but just kind of watching him out there this week, it just, like, he looked lost. And, you know, you feel bad for the guy because he's a hard worker. He seems like a good kid. He wants to do well, but it just doesn't seem like, you know, he's got it all there to do that.
He looks so jittery back there at times where he's not even going through the progressions. He starts shaking. The footwork was terrible. He's not going through any kind of progressions. He looks like it's the pressure's getting to him. I mean, I think it's just as much mental as anything. He's letting the pressure get to him.
I mean, he's seeing ghosts out there like Sam Darnold was last night. So something that's not helping Trubisky is the run game. So the Bears ran the ball a franchise low 7 times Sunday. And this was on Walter Payton bobblehead day, by the way. So Monday, Matt Nagy said that, "I know we have to run the ball more. I'm not an idiot." They ranked 28th in rushing attempts with an average of 20 per game. Last season, they averaged 28. Nagy might not be an idiot, but it sure seems like he is reluctant to commit to the run game. So I hate to get Freud in on you, John, but what does the Buffon superego say about Nagy's inability to commit to the run game? 55 seconds, go.
You know, I listened to Nagy's post-game presser, and he said that he would throw the ball as many times or run the ball as many times as it took if it was working. Now, that's fine, but I also heard him say about how they were picking up first downs in the air, and I guess he's talking about the few first downs they actually got. Yeah, they were through passing because they weren't doing anything else. But it seems like this team is okay with just ditching the running game as soon as it doesn't look like it's going to be effective a few drives into the game. That's kind of coming from that Andy Reid mentality. He's also been criticized for doing that. So, get rid of the rushing attack. Let's have Mitch Trubisky throw the ball 54 times. That seems like a recipe for success. I mean, if this offense is going to be effective, they need to find a way to run the ball, and maybe that just doesn't happen this year. I don't know. But if your best run plays are coming off end-arounds, there's a problem. How many games can you rattle off that involve the team running the ball 7 times and they win? I can't think of any. You can't really blame the backs because Tariq Cohen led the team in carries with 3. David Montgomery, the guy you're so high on and you moved up in the draft to get, got 2. It's an absolute mess, and I don't know if it's salvageable at this point. I don't know why anybody would be confident that it's salvageable at this point.
And you think, going back to the season opener, sorry, I got TV on my mind, the season opener against the Packers where they threw 50-plus times, this is the same game. They learn absolutely nothing. You're not going to win if you can't run the football, especially with a struggling quarterback back there who is not only coming off a shoulder injury, but who is also just, he's seeing ghosts out there every time he's back there. You need to run the ball. You can't, it seems like after that first time they handed off to Cohen, it was then 2nd and 10. It feels like that was like the defining moment where Nagy's like, okay, no, the run's not going to work. And you can't do that after, you can't abandon the run after one play.
Well, I know that they don't want to be set up in 2nd and long and 3rd and long situations, but how many times are they throwing incompletions on 1st downs too?
Absolutely.
So they're not really setting themselves up very well after that either. So something needs to change, and maybe have a little more confidence to run the ball, at least eat up some clock or something. Keep the defense off the field.
And I'm trying to remain optimistic. Let's hope that something changes next week, Don. If I keep thinking it and saying it, do you think it'll eventually happen?
No, you know, I'd love to believe that, but I can't.
So, John, on Monday, I wrote this opening line for BearsWire.com. As the Chicago Bears offense can't seem to find its identity, the defense feels like they're losing theirs. 2 straight un-Bear-like performances force us to ask this question. What has happened to the Bears defense? Take it away, John, because the Bears defense certainly isn't.
Look, I know they haven't been getting as much pressure on the quarterback. I know they gave up some big drives to Oakland and New Orleans. I know there's an APB out for Leonard Floyd. I don't know where the hell he went. And the box scores, they don't look very good. Apparently, losing Akeem Hicks was much bigger than I anticipated. But, I mean, there are people ripping the defense today, saying that being gassed really isn't a thing. As if being marched out there every couple of minutes, taking violent hits one after another, goes away with 15 minutes of halftime. They aren't machines that get refueled. You don't generate mana like you're playing some sort of video game. In something like 6 possessions, the Bears offense had 5 three and outs and then fumbled on the first play and the other. You think just taking a beat down and a beat down and a beat down, that just goes away with a cup of Gatorade and a few deep breaths? I tweeted during the game that the Bears defense should ask for a trade as an entire unit. They were only down 2 at halftime despite the fact they were using a JV offense on their team. So there's things to work on this defensive side of the ball. That goes without saying, but it's still the best thing about this team. That being said, I'd like to welcome on our guest tonight, John Kegley, co-host of the Locked On Chargers podcast. Hey, John, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We're here to break down the Chargers, the next opponent in the Bears' sights. The Chargers, they lost a tough one against the Titans Sunday, and that's probably an understatement. The record drops down to 2-5. Bizarre conclusion to the game with the team down by 3 points 39 seconds ago. Things got really weird. Can you kind of take us through that whole scenario and what was going on in your mind?
Rivers around the 16-yard line, completed a 15-yard pass to Eckler that looked like a touchdown. Referees reviewed it. They said he was an inch short. So the Chargers line up, and I'm thinking, you know what? Quarterback sneak. We got this. It's okay. They can overturn it and say we're inch short. What does quarterback sneak it? What do? The Chargers line up in shotgun, and right here I'm already losing my mind. And then we get a false start. So now it's first and goal at the 6 instead of first and goal at the inch yard line. And we do a passing play. We get bailed out by a pass interference. Now we're back down to the 1 yard line. What do? We go shotgun again. We run it to Melvin Gordon. Looks like he gets in. They review it. Once again, they rule he is short again. And it looked like he fumbled the ball, but his knee was down. So fumble doesn't count, or else he would have had a touchdown because the fumble happened right at the goal line. Next play, shotgun again. Melvin Gordon gets the handoff and he fumbles as he's trying to go into the end zone, and the Titans recover it. As we reviewed it, they said obvious recovery by the Titans, and the Chargers lose 23-20.
Oh man, that is heartbreaking. I mean, but you know, that has kind of been not just this year, but in years past. I mean, Chargers fans have kind of been subjected to some of these heartbreaking losses in the regular season, haven't they?
Oh, a lot of them. I can count on every single toe and hand, just like the first 5 years I was a Charger fan, how many times it happened. I mean, the last time we played the Bears, it happened. We were up 19-7, and here come the Bears all the way back with that long touchdown to Zach Miller, and we lose the Monday night game in 2015. I mean, the list goes on. 24-0 lead over Peyton Manning at halftime. We lose 35-24. The Holy Roller back in the 70s.
Oh man, it's not a great time to be a San Diego /LA Charger fan. I mean, it's hopefully that curse can get broken for you guys sometime down the road. But you know, looking over the stats, quarterback Phillip Rivers, he places fourth in a few key categories like yards and average yards per game. But we also know that sometimes stats can be deceiving when it comes to quarterbacks. Are those impressive numbers kind of indicative of how Rivers is actually playing, or do you think that he is kind of underwhelming this year?
If you were to look at just the stats alone, I would say he's underachieving. But our offensive line is horrible, so those stats are actually pretty good. He does have some interceptions. Some of them were bad throws, but some of them were our receivers just not catching the ball and it going off of their hands, or someone not being in the right spot, or Rivers just trying to play hero ball at the last second of the game and trying to force a ball into triple coverage when he could have just checked down and hoped for a 60-yard field goal to be made. But for the most part, our offensive line is horrible. We just lost another offensive lineman this week to a broken ankle, and we're down to 2 starters basically, and the rest of it is duct tape. So Rivers is doing pretty good, I would say, with having pressure in his face constantly. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league with pressure in his face.
You know, a quarterback's best friend sometimes is the run game, but the run game for the Chargers hasn't always been clicking or been firing on all cylinders. Running back Melvin Gordon, he's been back for 3 games after his holdout. Has he helped this rushing attack at all, or is he still showing some rust?
He is not helping at all. When we just had Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson, we were playing way better. I think Austin Eckler was tied for the league lead with total touchdowns at one point this year. He was running all over the field and catching passes all over the field, and then Justin Jackson would come in as Austin Eckler's breather and break off a 20-yard run or a 10-yard run on one carry. Then Justin Jackson got hurt, and Melvin Gordon's here to play. And Melvin Gordon has yet to break a run bigger than 7 yards. And this past week, he had 16 carries and did nothing with it. The game before, he had 8 carries and did nothing with it. And yet he held out for the beginning of the year to get a bigger contract that he thinks he's worth. He thinks he's worth Le'Veon Bell and Ezekiel Elliott-type money. But he couldn't even come back and help this team win running the ball. And then he fumbles at the goal line. So there's just so many questions I have with Melvin Gordon. I think we were better off without him. I think Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson were way better together.
Do you think this is his last season in LA?
It's tough to say. I mean, if it was me, I would say yes. But I could see the coaching staff putting the franchise tag on him and making him come to training camp next year and saying that training camp was the difference. Our coaches are pretty stubborn in their own ways. They thought that Trent Scott and Sam Tevy were really good left tackle and right tackle for offensive line. You can hear press conferences of Coach Lynn saying, we have faith in them. We think they're pretty good. And then here comes the game and they're getting absolutely destroyed and Rivers is under pressure the whole game. It's like, what did you see in practice exactly, Coach Lynn? What we're seeing and what you're seeing is completely different. I don't know what kind of glasses you wear, but it's not good. So I want to say that it should be his last year, but with how stubborn the coaches are and what they believe, I think you could see him here on a franchise tag.
You were talking about that offensive line. You talked about Forrest Lamp breaking his right fibula. He's done for the season. Lamp was playing for Mike Pouncey, who was lost for the season because of a neck injury. Can you talk about, you were talking about how poorly the offensive line is playing. How do you think they match up with the Bears this week? Could they pull something out of their hat here?
Oh, Lord. Please don't make me think about this. That Bears defense knows how to swarm Khalil Mack in the game, man. I love watching that defense. It's so much fun. But we have Scott Quessenberry, who's going to be the starting center this week, who actually played pretty well against the Titans defense, and their defense is probably top eight in the league. So it gives me a little bit of faith, but we still got guys like Dan Feeney, who gets pushed around easily, Trent Scott, who can't block anything, Sam Tevy, who gets bullied. The only guy on the line who's actually put up, you know, an average performance, I would say, is Michael Schofield, and that's our right guard. So it's pretty bad. But like I said, Rivers is really good under pressure. So as long as they can do enough to let Rivers get 3 or 4 seconds to just find somebody, I think we have a chance. But as far as holding back the Bears defense, I just don't see it happening.
We're talking to John Kegley, co-host of Locked On Chargers podcast here at Buffon 55. John, take us through some of the Chargers' key players in the passing game, because they do have a nice little medley of guys who could finish this season with 1,000 yards receiving, whether it be their wide receiver position or anywhere else. Can you talk about some of the key guys there?
Well, I'd say Keenan Allen's the only guy on pace to get 1,000 yards right now. He's amazing. He can catch anything and everything. He likes to call it toe drag swag, where he'll catch a ball that's heading out of bounds and just slightly drag the toes better than anybody else. And his get off the line is just amazing. Mike Williams should be a 1,000-yard receiver, but he's dropped some of the balls that have been thrown at him. He hasn't been as good after the catch. Last year he caught 10 touchdowns. This year it just hasn't been the same. He's the guy that's been underwhelming this year. He needs to pick it up. He needs to put those stats back up. Hunter Henry should be a guy who can maybe get 1,000 yards. That's just a big maybe, but he's capable of it. But he's been hurt a lot. He missed all last year. And then this year he comes back. In the first game back, he breaks his kneecap and has to miss more games. And now he's finally back for the past two games. And the difference is shown in the red zone and everything, because without him in the red zone, we were throwing interceptions or fumbling at the goal line. When he's in, we were scoring touchdowns. Even against the Titans, we were completing passes and converting our third downs. He's a big difference maker. And then we have guys like Travis Benjamin that went to IR. He didn't make much of a difference, but he was that deep threat. But with him gone, we're all celebrating here as Charger fans, because he dropped a lot of balls as well. Even though he's a deep threat and got open, he would just drop everything. And we have some guys that are practice squad guys, like Andre Patton and Jason Moore, who got added to the team due to a lot of injuries. And then we have Jeremy Davis, who's been a practice squad guy for us forever. But since we got rid of Tyrell Williams in the offseason to the Raiders, this is basically his make or break year. So this could be his last year with us. Those three guys, Patton, Moore, and Jeremy Davis, haven't really put up anything on the stat sheets. But in preseason, Patton was pretty good. So eventually he's got to shine. But in against the Titans, we only went to Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and Hunter Henry. Like, eventually we got to find a fourth or fifth receiver to go to and not be predictable.
Let's switch sides of the ball. I want to talk about the Chargers defense a little bit. And I guess you can't talk about the Chargers defense unless you start with Joey Bosa, who has 5 sacks this season. Evaluate his play this season and how the pass rush in general is working for the Chargers.
Well, Joey Bosa has been pretty amazing. He's probably the only guy on defense that's been consistent and has actually been showing how hard he wants it and how hard he works and that he actually cares about winning. The rest of these guys have not been consistent. Justin Jones and Brandon Mebane missed the last game, but Mebane doesn't really show much of a pass rush at all. The fact that we re-signed him still upsets me, and it upsets our co-host Daniel and David. But the reason the Chargers wanted him back was because he has this leadership role in the locker room. So that's why he's back. And then Justin Jones, I did not like drafting him. We drafted him in the third round when we could have gotten him in the later rounds. And he was really bad last year. He showed improvement this year, but now he's hurt. So how much of that improvement is going to still be there? We drafted Jerry Tillery with our first pick this year. And he hasn't really shown much yet. I mean, yeah, it's his first year. He needs to develop, but he's a first-round pick. You got to at least be getting something. Last week, he didn't even have a stat. If you look on ESPN against the Chargers-Titans stats, you do not see Jerry Tillery anywhere inside the defensive stats at all. So our pass rush is pretty brutal, but our run defense is even worse. And with going up against Tariq Cohen this week, I am so worried because our tackling is also really bad. And if we can't get to Mitchell Trubisky, he's just going to find Tariq Cohen all day. He's just going to juke around us. That guy might be short, but he is strong.
And that kind of led right into my next question. I wanted to talk about the linebacking core. I mean, Thomas Davis leads the team in tackling, but like you kind of alluded to, that might not be the greatest thing in the world. Can you take us through, like you said, the run defense and the linebackers and the tackling for the Chargers?
Thomas Davis looked like a good signing, but since he's been here, he looks like he's so tired. He can't keep up with a lot of the passing routes, and he's missed some tackles. He hasn't been the worst tackling guy. Da'Tavius Brown is our worst tackling guy, and so is Denzel Perryman, even though Perryman's supposed to be our best run-stopping linebacker, but he's just been missing tackles all over the field. The two guys that have been doing really good at tackling are Kazir White and Uchenna Nwosu, and Nwosu has filled in really good for Melvin Ingram. Nwosu can play linebacker, and he can play defensive end, so either way, you're going to see him on the field pass rushing from either position, and he just flies around the tackle as fast as he can and will hit your quarterback while he's throwing and force fumbles or interceptions. He's done it a few times already. He even did it in the playoffs last year. Did it against the Titans last week where he hit Tannehill as he was throwing in the ball, just popped high in the air, and Roderick Teamer ended up catching up to it for an interception. But the tackling, man, the tackling's horrible. We miss tackles like crazy. It's like every single NFL team we face is made up of ice and we just can't grab them. It's horrible. And these guys are NFL players. And they cannot tackle. And if you go up against Tariq Cohen, man, that guy is like Darren Sproles when he was on the Chargers, a guy that's just really strong, really fast, really elusive, and just really good in the pass game. And he's hard to tackle. And that's my only worry this week, really.
You're making me feel a lot better about Tariq Cohen this week. We're talking to John Kegley, co-host of the Locked On Chargers podcast. Talk about the secondary in the Chargers. And passing defense looks pretty formidable this year as far as the secondary goes. Can you break down some of the playmakers there?
Well, if we were healthy, it wouldn't be. If we had Casey Hayward, Trevor Williams, Michael Davis, Rashawn Jenkins, and Derwin James, we'd be fine. But Derwin James has a fractured foot and probably won't play till week 10. And Derwin James is the difference maker. Like, you guys are lucky you're not playing against him, because with how bad the Bears' offense is, there probably would have been a few interceptions just from Derwin James alone.
I believe it.
But without him, you guys are saved. We have guys like Michael Davis, who's pretty good at man-to-man coverage, and before he was really bad at turning his head. So if he was man-to-man with a guy, stride for stride, he just wouldn't turn his head, and he'd get a pass interference, or they'd catch it over his head or back shoulder throw. Now he's learned to turn his head around, so he's become better. Casey Hayward is our best corner. He's really good at covering. That's probably the area that you want to avoid if you're the Bears. You want to throw somewhere else. If you see Brendan Faison in the game, you want to throw his way. He's our worst corner. He comes in a lot, and he will give up a pass easily. Against the Colts, when we had an injury, he came in, and they just kept throwing his way like three times in a row, and every time was a catch. He cannot cover, which just sucks, because when we saw him in preseason last year, he was really good, and we had high hopes for him, and now he's on the field because of injuries, and he cannot perform. But Desmond King in the slot corner might be the pick six of the game. If Trubisky tries to go quick in the slot, Desmond King might get a pick six.
You know, I was feeling good until you said that. I mean, there's always a possibility for the pick six, but we'll see how that works. I mean, it seems like there's kind of a mash unit in the secondary. Lots of injuries on this Chargers squad. You know, it wouldn't be a Bears podcast unless we talk a little bit about special teams. Bears had a kickoff return for a touchdown last week, but they also had two punt blocks. Anything stand out for the special teams with the Chargers? I know they've gone through kickers quite a bit throughout the years. Anything notable on the special teams unit?
Not really. We don't really have a dangerous returner. I mean, Desmond King can return punts for touchdowns, but with how rare chances he has to return, I mean, when are you going to see it? And then as far as kicking goes, Michael Badgley was a really good kicker for us, but he has missed the whole year because right after training camp, right after the preseason, he got hurt with a groin injury, and he's been missing every game since. So we had our punter, Ty Long, kicking field goals and punting, and he's from the CFL. He was kicking, I think, 86% field goal percentage, I believe, in the CFL. And so he was doing pretty good. And then out of nowhere, we decide to sign this kicker from, I believe, Illinois, Connor McLaughlin, who missed a couple of field goals, but he's also made a 50-yard field goal. So he's inconsistent, but he's got leg, so he's filling in quite nice for us. But as far as anything special out of us, not really. You're probably not going to see the Chargers block a punt. It's not something we're known for in our history.
One more question for me before I throw you into the chat room. Here in Chicago, we've had an offense that's obviously struggling to find an identity. With the Chargers, there are some reports that the entire team is searching for an identity. Do you have any idea what the identity is for this team, or are they still searching for that identity?
I don't think the identity is we run the same thing over and over again and we're just predictable. I don't think our coaches really want to experiment or become aggressive like we used to be. Coach Lynn was aggressive last year. He was going for it on fourth down. He was taking shots. And this year it's kind of different. We're being so conservative. We're running the same plays over and over again. Besides the Titans game, we ran the different plays and it worked. We finally went up tempo as well. But if I had to give an identity to this whole team, it would have to be injuries, consistent play calling that doesn't work, and choking. We either start off fast and choke the game away, or we start off slow, come really close to making a comeback, and then choke the game away.
Oh, man, that has got to be just heartbreaking. Alyssa, I know you've been interacting with our Mixler.com chat room. Any questions for John from our friends in there?
Yes, I have four questions. Hello, John, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So I got some questions for you. I want to start off. You were talking about the disappointing return of Melvin Gordon this season. So with the trade deadline looming, could you see the Chargers possibly dealing him if the right offer comes knocking?
No, they actually gave Melvin Gordon an opportunity to go looking for trade partners. They asked and they said, yeah, go ahead. But the only reason they did that was probably just to show Melvin Gordon that nobody really wants you. So you might as well take the low money that we're giving you. And I think they also did it just to mess with him and try to say, look, we got leverage here. You might be able to go look for trades, but we're not trading you, so you might as well come back. I think it was all a leverage thing. I don't see them trading him. They already said they don't have any interest in trading him, and the Chargers aren't known for trading people at the deadline. The most we've ever traded for was like a seventh-round pick, and that was to get Sean Lismore, I think, from the Cowboys, who was a defensive tackle who did nothing really for us. And the other seventh-round trade was to get Cardale Jones from the Bills.
So I want to kind of go over back to the Chargers offense, or stick with the Chargers offense. They have thrown 6 interceptions and fumbled the ball 6 times. So those numbers don't sound good. Are they a turnover machine or not?
I'm going to say they're a turnover machine. Most of the time it's 3 and out, so we're not moving the ball well. And then Rivers starts getting desperate and tries to lob stuff in the third or fourth quarter. And that's when maybe you can call it a turnover machine. But other than that, they take care of the ball pretty well. It's just when we get desperate, things happen. Melvin Gordon could probably be a turnover machine. Austin Eckler can fumble the ball inside the goal line, but if he's in between the 20s, Eckler will hold onto the ball pretty well. Since his rookie year, he's done a lot better at holding onto the ball until he gets to the goal line. So I'm going to say they're a turnover machine. I think they just mess up at the wrong time when it's the most important. That's when it happens.
Well, I don't think Bears fans would be opposed to them, Melvin Gordon fumbling on the 1-yard line again, or for them messing up at the end. I feel like they can really use that.
I wouldn't be surprised if it happened again, especially since they all said in an interview that we're behind Melvin Gordon, we support him, he's going to get another chance. And I'm sitting there going, what does it take to show you that somebody on this team doesn't deserve second chances? Offensive line doesn't, Melvin Gordon doesn't. Some of the guys in the secondary don't. Like, what does it take, Coach Lynn, to know that it's time to move on and put what works on the field?
Maybe fumbling the ball on the 1-yard line 2 games in a row?
Hey, let's hope.
Only Trubisky throws the interception.
I want to talk about the 2019 draft class. How have they looked?
Oh, not too good. Jerry Tillery, as I mentioned earlier, is not really performing well. He's supposed to be the major difference on our defensive line. He's supposed to be able to stop the run, stop the pass, but he hasn't performed really well. But we have guys like Drew Tranquil, who's shown a lot of improvement, shown a lot of big plays, really. He's stopped the pass, stopped the run. He flies all over the field. You could just tell that this guy could turn into something, but there's also been times when he has gotten lost in coverage, if you will. He'll look around in the zone and he'll see a guy and he'll chase after him and he'll leave his assignment and that guy will catch a third down completion. But other than that, he makes the plays. He's all over the field. But the guy I'm really worried about is Cortez Broughton. He was in the 7th round And me and Daniel Wade both looked at him and said, this guy could be a steal if we got him in the late rounds, and we got him. But he has yet to really do something. He's been disappointing. In the preseason, he was disappointing, and he got a chance to prove himself this week, and he was pretty disappointing. Easton Stick, we could draft it as a backup QB, if you will, but he's not going to see the field for a while because we got Tyrod Taylor on a two-year deal. So I wouldn't worry about him. And then Emeka Ebule is probably just going to be a special teams guy. If you look at his tape on Houston, he was a linebacker that could also cover receivers in the slot. So there's room for him on here because our defense loves those athletic type linebackers. But he doesn't really get a chance to play yet, so he's just a special teams guy. So I would say this draft class has been pretty disappointing, really.
And I got one last question before I let you go. The Chargers seem to be meeting this Bears team at the right time. It feels like they're spiraling a little bit. What's your confidence that maybe the Chargers can turn things around in Chicago?
The only confident thing going for me is the Bears offense is turnover prone. So maybe that's where we get our win. But as far as the Bears defense, it's going to be probably two or three quarters of the Chargers offense struggling. And then eventually we start picking it up like we have a lot this week, and maybe we start making a comeback. I could see it maybe being like 13-3. The Bears are winning in the fourth quarter and the Chargers make a run for it. And it just becomes, do they finally complete the comeback or do they fumble at the 1 yard line again? I don't really know if we can really make the comeback. I'm really nervous about this game. I'm going to be at the game flying from San Diego to go see it. So I'm really hoping they do win, but I am really nervous. I don't know if we can make that comeback.
Hey, John, I got one more question before we cut you loose. We're about a year and a half into this Chargers to L.A. I don't want to say experiment because they're basically there. But you're based in San Diego. But when you look at an L.A. Chargers game, especially that game against the Steelers, where it was obviously heavily in, there's more Steeler fans than Chargers fans. How do you think this whole Chargers to L.A. thing has been unfolding in the last two seasons?
God, that is such a train wreck to talk about. It's not going over too well. The stadium is usually mostly opposing fans. I remember last year there was a game against the Cardinals that was in LA and the tickets were cheap. Like on an average day, the cheapest ticket's like $120 at least. That's the cheapest ticket to get into that stadium because it's only 27,000 seats. But the Cardinal game was $38 cheapest. Oh, anybody could have got into that game. The stadium was empty. There was no Cardinal fans. There was maybe like 100 of them in that whole stadium. Like when the Cardinals scored to take a 10-0 lead, it sounded like you were on top of a mountain watching a concert, listening to the sound. Like they were quiet and the seats were still empty. When the opposing team's fans come, they are loud. They take over the stadium. The Steelers game, I didn't get to get into it. I didn't have the money to, but I stood outside the gate watching it on my phone so I could hear the crowd. And they were rocking the place, and the Charger fans were leaving in the second quarter, and all the Steeler fans started leaving at like the fourth quarter when the game looked like it was over. And then you just see swarms of Steeler fans just walking out. Like you can't see a Charger fan anywhere. And then my friend sent me videos and photos that were inside the game. It was all Steeler fans, and we all saw it coming. I would say this experiment's not working really well, but the NFL could care less, really. It might surprise people, but as long as those tickets are being bought by scalpers or opposing teams or whoever, they're fine with it. As long as TV contracts are being bought in LA, which are worth more than they are in San Diego, the NFL could care less. So I don't like it. It's a giant train wreck. It's embarrassing to the team. It's embarrassing to the players, but the NFL doesn't care.
Man, that's too bad. And it's unfortunate they couldn't find a way to stay in San Diego, even if it wasn't at the old Qualcomm Stadium. But John, I want to thank you so much for your time. Before we cut you loose, please tell our audience where they can find your work, listen to your stuff, and talk to you on social media.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. This was really fun. I'm honored to be on a Chicago Bears radio station. I love Chicago Bears team history. It's one of my favorite things. So to be on a radio station for them is pretty cool.
Nice.
We have two podcasts, believe it or not. One's a live show that happens once a week, about an hour show. It's called Chargers Domination Live. Look it up on Facebook, Chargers Domination Live, or on Twitter at Chargers Dom Pod. And then we have our weekly bite-sized podcast called Locked On Chargers. You can find that on Facebook at Locked On Chargers or on Twitter at Locked On LAC. And then if you want to find me, you can go on Twitter and look up John Kegley. And if the Twitter tag looks like it says at biggest Charger fan, it's mine. I spelled it a little bit weird because I had to take out some characters to make it fit. But if you type in John Kegley and it looks like it says at biggest Charger fan, it's me.
Awesome. John, thanks again for breaking down the Chargers. Feel like we know a lot more about them now. Enjoy the game. Enjoy Chicago. And we'll talk to you down the line.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We'll return right after this quick message.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alec Lifshitz, a.k.a. Trey Busy, and I'm here to have a conversation with you guys about mental health. A lot of times in our communities, we don't talk about mental health enough, and it goes under the radar as a reoccurring issue. So I took the liberty to create the Let's Talk It Out podcast. This podcast was created to break the silence on mental health issues and to give a voice to those suffering. I have conversations with professionals in the mental health field as well as those who are suffering, and we break down different ways to stump stigmas and ways to cope with mental health conditions. The show is broadcasted live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time on Mixlr.com/LTIO podcast. That's Mixlr.com/LTIO podcast. If you can't make the live recording of the podcast, then you can find the podcast available to you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Give the podcast a follow on Twitter and Instagram at LTIO Podcast on both platforms. Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you guys in the future.
We now return to our program.
John, that music signifies one thing. It's time for the second half of our B55 questions. So, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling cautiously optimistic, but I don't want to, you know, like feel too comfortable considering the product that we saw last week. But, you know, what are your thoughts on the Chargers game?
I mean, I'm tired of getting the kiss of death from these guys. Every time someone says that the Bears are going to, you know, take them to the cleaners, they end up losing. So, I don't like it. I don't like it when someone says the Bears are going to win.
I just mentioned that before the show, too.
Yeah. Tell us they're going to kick the Bears' ass. That's what we need to hear. That's what has to happen.
Well, we might hear that in the coming weeks with the schedule they got coming up.
I'm sure we will.
Okay, John, so let's get right into our next set of questions. Khalil Mack has not had a sack since week 4 when he had 1.5 against Kirk Cousins. He was shut out against the Raiders and against the Saints. The only other game he did not have a sack was against the Packers in week 1. So the Bears are 3-0 when Mack has at least one sack and 0-3 when he has zero. Coincidence or not? Clock is wound down to zero and off it goes.
Well, we talked a lot about the lack of quarterback pressure, but we're seeing Mack get double teamed on a very consistent basis. Opponents are keying in on stopping him, and usually that means that there are opportunities for other playmakers then. We talked about Hicks not being there, but this should be where Leonard Floyd thrives. I was hoodwinked. I was led astray. I thought Leonard Floyd was just going to smoke offensive linemen this year. I was wrong. What the hell happened? Also, Roquan Smith, another player that should be getting it right now, not kind of under the radar a little bit. But you bring in Khalil Mack to be a game changer, and we've seen him wreck games even when he's double teamed. So, you know, with some of the injuries on defense and the gross ineptitude of the offense, there's more pressure on Khalil Mack to throw people out of the way and sack the quarterback. So, yeah, as Mack succeeds, most likely the team will succeed. I don't think we need to draw out any physics equations on the blackboard to get that across. I think other players feed off of Mack. I think when they see him blowing up plays, they want to get in on the action too. I know that's a lot of pressure to put on one guy, but that's why you trade for him.
Absolutely, and I still feel like even to this point, he's been worth that big contract and that money, you know, but he's not the only guy on defense. You know, like you said, like some other guys, especially Leonard Floyd, who again, he hoodwinked me as well. They got to step up, and it feels like Floyd is just like right there, and he's not getting there. And it's incredibly frustrating.
Just enough to make you mad.
Just enough to make you mad. So sticking with the defense, another player that hasn't had as great of a season as last year, Eddie Jackson. He had 6 interceptions last year. 2 of them returned for touchdowns. This year, zip, nada, nothing. After last season concluded, sports reporters were calling Jackson the breakout star of the NFL. Where does Eddie's play stand with you, and do you still consider him an elite safety? You've got 55 ticks.
Well, it's not like he's playing terrible. He's probably going to end up having more tackles this year than he did last year. I get that number can be skewed for a number of different reasons, but I guess it comes down to this year just isn't as sexy as last year. You said it, Alyssa. He had 6 picks last year, and 2 of them went to the house. The turnovers aren't there this year, and that's something that the sputtering offense really needs at this point. Jackson said this week that the team doesn't have the swagger, doesn't have the energy. Well, what the hell happened? Why aren't guys flying around like crazy? Why is it when one thing goes wrong, the team loses its edge? Were things going so well last year that it was just easy to ride that wave? Eddie Jackson's a great player that hasn't had too many home run plays this year. And what does this team need to stay in games? home run plays, like a pick six or 102-yard kickoff. They need to find a way to get that energy back. Maybe they find something in this all-players meeting that they were having, and they address that inside the locker room. Teammates calling each other out, obviously not in the press, but holding each other accountable. No faces of the ball are world beaters right now, and maybe there just needs to be an attitude adjustment.
Yeah, and obviously Eddie Jackson doesn't have any interceptions, but you look at what he did last season, and, you know, so many we're seeing this season that, you know, so many teams are respecting what he's able to do and be a playmaker out there. So, you know, obviously we're seeing how they're game planning against him. It's kind of not as quite as a Khalil Mack, but you're seeing how these offenses are adjusting to him.
And other guys aren't stepping up.
Absolutely. So now I want to switch back to the offense. So we've talked about Anthony Miller in the past, John, but I again need to inquire about your thoughts on the second-year receiver. Sunday he had more playing time than he's had in any game this season with 49 snaps. He responded with a season-high 5 catches on 9 targets for 64 yards. But according to Coach Nagy, Miller ran the wrong route on one play, and he also had a lost fumble on a run play. John, I spent a week in Bourbonnais, and I saw Javon Wims play at a very high level. Do you think that Wims, who got just one pass target on Sunday, which he caught for a touchdown, deserves to see more playing time over Miller? Inquiring minds want to know. The clock is ticking.
I don't think anyone would be opposed to trying something different on the offensive side of the ball anywhere. Wims is a straight-up baller. I'd love to see him get more time. It's difficult because you have invested a lot in Anthony Miller, both in time and in draft capital. And you see a guy with freak ability, and he's just might not be polishing up as quickly as some might have hoped. We talked about him freelancing sometimes, maybe not running the right route. We saw him on several occasions show frustration after balls thrown his way. He didn't really get into his catch radius. At the beginning of the year, Anthony Miller was poised to be the number two in this offense, being the home run guy next to the reliability of Allen Robinson. Well, now it's a rarity for someone other than Robinson to catch a damn ball. So that could be on the quarterback, obviously, and the ball isn't really getting spread around too much. So is installing Javon Wims going to do anything? I don't know. I want to see him get his chance, so maybe you put him in a little bit more, and if he can create enough separation that Trubisky can actually recognize that he's open, maybe you leave him in.
And obviously, you know, Miller, there's been, like, the one criticism about him is it's like he's having trouble understanding the offense in the second year, which, you know, that's a tad concerning. But, you know, it's not just Miller. You know, obviously it's Trubisky and this entire offense too, but looking at Javon Wims, I think you have to start trying new things. You need to try to find something to get this offense moving. And obviously, it's not going to be one guy because there's so many people that need to step up. But, you know, maybe Javon Wims can be a spark in the passing game.
I mean, like I said, I'm not opposed to trying anything at this point.
So given what you've learned about the Chargers, thanks to our guest, John Kegley, what concerns you about the Bears' upcoming opponent? The clock starts now.
Well, I don't care how much Kegley said the Chargers suck. I'm concerned about everything. What isn't there to be concerned about? They do have an all right offense or defense if you look at the statistics. They're fifth in pass defense. I know they're banged up, but they're only allowing about 216 yards per game. So if the passing game is going to get back on track, maybe this isn't the best game to do it. It is promising that the Chargers are giving up 117 yards on the ground per game. That's 21st in the league. Could we finally see a formidable running game? I'm praying. On the other side of the ball, Phillip Rivers and the passing attack are third in the league, averaging about 293 yards through the air. They do have some guys that can gash you, whether it's Eckler catching the ball, Melvin Gordon could get back on track. Keenan Allen is incredible. Then throw in Hunter Henry and Mike Williams. And even though, you know, as John said, the Mike Williams doesn't have a touchdown this year, he's been kind of a reliable target, at least in the short term. In the last three games, he's averaged 5 catches. So forget that the Chargers are 2-5. They're a solid squad. Outside of one game with the Dolphins, every one of their games has been decided by a touchdown or less. This is no gimme.
I'm with you, too. Everything about this matchup concerns me, especially looking at last week's game where this was a Bears team that played a Saints team that was missing a Hall of Fame quarterback in Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara. And look what happened. They had their worst loss in the Matt Nagy era. So, I mean, this team, they're supposed to have a players-only meeting sometime this week where these players need to clear the air, hash it out, whatever, get it fixed. You know, hopefully we'll see that on Sunday or some form of just progression.
Yeah, at this point, the Bears shouldn't feel like they can throttle anybody, or Bears fans shouldn't feel like they can just run over anybody. So, yeah, every game's concerning.
Absolutely. So I got a couple of questions from the chat room for you, John, before we get into our last question.
Sure.
So Stacy wants to know, should the Bears move on from Trubisky if there's not significant improvement over these last 10 games? And if you think so, like, who are some of the guys out there that you could see the Bears going after?
I imagine they'll let him finish the season out, and then there's some serious assessment that needs to go on. I would say that if it doesn't get better, then yeah, you start looking. I put up a poll on Twitter today just to see what Bears fans thought about it, and I had four guys on there. I had who would you want under center in 2020? I said Trubisky, Phillip Rivers, Marcus Mariota, or Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater got the majority of the votes. I mean, that might just be some recency bias because we saw what Bridgewater did to the Bears. After that was Phillip Rivers, and then after that was Trubisky, and then poor Mariota only got about 5% of the vote. But you know, I think Bears fans are ready to move on. There have been some, you know, Trubisky truthers that are, you know, turning in their cards for lack of a better term. I'm a guy that's starting to lean the other way. I think that if this doesn't get any better, the Bears window is closing. The defense is going to be elite for, what, another 2 years maybe? You can't just hope that something all of a sudden clicks for Trubisky. And if it's not there after year three, you got to start looking for other options because the window's not always going to be open. You can't say, well, we'll give him 2 more years, and if it doesn't work, well, the defense will still be good. That's not how it works. So you got to strike while the iron's hot. I can see them going a different direction next year.
And, John, I cannot not ask you about this. Adam Schefter is reporting that Tom Brady might want out of New England after this season because he wants to prove that he can win without Belichick. If he is available, should Pace sacrifice the future and sign Brady to a mammoth contract right now so this team could go win a Super Bowl?
Ooh, well, he doesn't really have a mammoth contract with New England right now. He's been taking a pay cut because his wife makes about $40 billion a year, so he doesn't really need the money. If Tom Brady wants to come to Chicago, sure. If it's going to be a kind of a team-friendly contract, he's going to be, what, 42 by that time, 43? I know he wants to play till he's 45. I guess if Tom Brady says, I want to play for the Chicago Bears, do you think Ryan Pace is going to be like, oh, no, we can't use you? I think that's fine, but I don't imagine that Tom Brady is going to come to Chicago.
And especially behind this offensive line right now.
Yeah, I don't see that happening.
So our last question is always our Buffon Boost. So we give you someone to give a pep talk to, and you always deliver a stirring speech. So last week we chose Charles Leno, and I don't know about you, but I think he played fairly well against a tough Saints defensive front.
You're welcome.
This week, John, it has to be the entire team. These Bears need your best Buffon Boost. So light your blowtorch and fire these guys up. The clock is off. Take it away.
Oh, fellas, I'm not going to be able to tell you anything you haven't already heard or thought about. Something needs to change, and it needs to change now. Things aren't perfect. There's a ton of adversity. So you're at a crossroads. Do you fold, accept the fact that this season has been disappointing, and just let Minnesota and Green Bay duke it out for the division? Or do you pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and flip that switch that made this team a monster last year? You are the defending NFC North champions. You're still wearing the crown. Now is the time to defend it. Now is the time to show the resiliency of a king. You're all being written off, so come back with a vengeance. This week, defend your house. And every week after that, defend your crown with anger, with passion, with pride. You're the Chicago Bears, gentlemen. You represent a town that never gives up. So get up and start fighting back. All right. After every week, I give you my prediction to the game, and so far, I'm 3-3, just like the Bears. This week, I can honestly say my confidence is waning a bit in this team, but as frustrating as the Bears are, I think the Chargers are even more frustrating. The Bears are at home. Let's hope someone sets a fire in the locker room during that all-players meeting. I think it's going to be close because it is the Chargers. I think the Bears win 19-16. I believe there's going to be a whole lot of field goals in this one. Once again, I want to thank John Kegley, co-host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, for being on the show tonight. Remember to follow me on Twitter at JDBuffone. Make sure you are following the Barroom on Twitter at Bears Barroom and on Facebook. Alyssa, tell our listeners where they can find your work and contact you on social media.
You can find my work over at BearsWire.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Alyssa Barbieri. I also want to tell those listening to us live on Mixlr.com that in just a few minutes, we've got 2 more shows coming up. Fantasy Football Goon with Joey Two Scoops and John the Tooch Santucci. They will welcome fantasy football legend Spaceball, and the three will get you prepped for week 8. That's followed by Shy Fans in the Stands with Greg Braggs and Joey Two Scoops. Those two shows, along with this one, will be available on podcast format. So make sure you subscribe to the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
That's right. And sign up on our Mixlr.com, the channel for email updates on all of our live shows. We'd love to have you in our chat room. It's all absolutely free to sign up for. Hope you join us live and interact with us. And if you listen to the podcast version, please leave us a review. That helps us out immensely. But that will do it for us. We'll see you next week, Bear fans. Enjoy the game.